Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. It was exciting yesterday to see Andrew Wilson. Andrew Wilson on the Crucible played my whole analysis that I had done just 1 hour before on the show. He was happy that I laid out with a crayon. He says, with a crayon. In French, we would say with a crayon. That I laid out in detail the scheme of his argument because he was pissed at the people of the internet for not understanding it. That's the power of autistic JF analysis. I make videos that are good if you want to fully understand an issue. And that is what my show is for. It's for a complete review of each word, each inclination of each sentence. That's what I tried to deliver, and it was useful to him because he had a difficulty with a crowd of pro-atheist secularists who were really interpreting it like he didn't make an argument, when in fact it was a very good argument. Baldur was asking about this. He said, "You said in your last stream that Andrew came with the zombie argument. But what if Christianity is genetic to Europe, only with a few changes, reconstituted to serve another group?" That is unrelated to the problem of Andrew, because Andrew Wilson comes with the zombie type of argument for Christianity only for the purpose of a thought experiment. He's not making an anthropological statement about the actual way in which Christianity developed. To the contrary, it's purely a thought experiment because it's good to... We need the thought experiment precisely because we don't have a natural experiment of it. We don't have a population that has converged toward exactly the same beliefs as Christianity, but without the book and without the God. You can have a social experiment happening where parts of Christianity may look like parts of another religion, but the pure thought experiment we know is unfit to reality. Someone is impersonating Mama JF on the chat. I will block you permanently. not interested in impersonation. Relaxed day today. I went to do some groceries because it had been a while. I'm working so hard these days. I rarely get a couple of hours during the day when I can go do some groceries. So I packed up, I bought $500 worth of groceries. But like I buy this once every month at this point. I don't need to do the grocery very often. Oh my God, female legs. I never get tired of watching them. What beauty is that? Holy shit. I'm going to play the play button to see them move, be active.
Can you explain what an incel is?
So an incel is just like someone who's involuntarily celibate. That loser sitting on...
We only get 1 second of these female legs. Oh my God. Okay, so she's asking, can you describe what is an incel?
Can you explain what an incel is?
So an incel is just like someone who is involuntarily celibate. That loser sitting on Reddit for 23 hours a day with Cheetah Dust and empty Mountain Dew cans all around them. And it just has a real...
It seems that you're... Cheetos Dust and cans around him... Cans of Mountain Dew, Cheeto Dust. You seem to be knowing what you're talking about here. This seems to have stemmed from the inside of your mind rather than an observation of reality. Cheeto Dust. I didn't have this concept in my mind. I didn't know that there was an association between incels and Cheeto Dust. What is Cheeto Dust? Is it... You are taking Cheetos and you're mixing them until they become a fine powder? Is that what Cheeto Dust is? Are you eating this? What the fuck?
and empty Mountain Dew cans all around them. And it just has a real stank smell that is involved with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm just going to paint you an image and like the fedora.
Okay, so when I get called an incel by insult on Twitter, I was wondering, who are these people? Now we get a video. Now we know who is out there calling me falsely incel, because I'm not an incel. I am in a relationship. My relationship status has been updated. I am currently in a relationship. People were soliciting sperm from me yesterday. I had to refuse the opportunity. All lines of production of sperm and frozen sperms have been halted. There is, so when people go out there on Twitter and think that calling me an incel is an insult, I'm always laughing my ass off because it's false. And I'm like, there's more chance that the person calling me an incel is incel themselves than I, because I have a constantly rolling set of applications for achieving the girlfriend status of JF. And in fact, at this point, I get to pick the fucking beautiful woman. At this point, it's pretty insane. I didn't know that I would have sex with women that are so beautiful in my life. I have achieved peak of my life, because I thought I had fucked the most beautiful woman I would ever fuck. But no, I was wrong. It keeps going up, keeps going up. Papa JF value keeps going up. Unbelievable. At this point, I am fiberglassed by the beauty of the woman who are interested in me.
Dora's a little crusty, and the beard, the neck beard is strong, but the facial hair is weak. And there's a bald spot in the back, and you can just see the fedora just hanging on for dear life. And he's sitting there muttering under his breath about how, like, Jessica Alba's ugly.
Right.
You know, literally, like, yeah. That's what you're talking about.
And you.
Well, what are you doing here?
Strong.
You are sitting on a chair talking about how an incel is ugly. At least Jessica Alba, you know, there's some public relevance to it. Okay, so those are the kind of women who call me incel on Twitter. Raised Fist says her breasts are so fat. Are so flat. Flat? I don't know if flat is the word. Maybe n-dimensional flat? I don't know. It is a very complex. I wouldn't say they are round. I can see what you mean. They are flat within the space of roundness, but I think it's one of these Eric Weinstein torsionary 720 degrees torsionary dimension spinners type of effect. Maybe a hairbrush model might be what's needed to explain the multidimensionality of the flatness here. Tom's Wheelhouse says protein folds. I don't know what that is. Chuck Garrity says she has zero self-reflection skills. It seems. I'm so floored by the desperate attempt. Oh, yeah. Before I talk about any news, there's a question that was sent to me by Yuki. And I've been forgetting it for like four shows. And so I want to come back to it. My question for the stream's Q&A is this. Similar to how there is a resource cost for maintaining extremely large muscles, is there any resource cost for maintaining an extremely large amount of information recorded within a genetic code? A lot of if-then genetic code for investing nutrients into developing particular phenotypes in a particular environment. That is a very good question. This definitely exists at multiple scales. Here's the scale where we are most likely to see it. there are studies about limits to the size of genomes. And so there is a point at which growing your genome has cost close to zero. And that point is a point at which there is much, much exploitation of this fact by self-replicating entities that we tend not to even call virus, but I think of them as viruses. If you want to learn about these selfish genetic elements, read Robert Trevor's book, Selfish Genetic Elements. He has a complete overview of all of these phenomenons, and there are various sorts of phenomenon like this, but they express themselves as what we call repeatable sequences in DNA. So basically, there are viruses that are so simple, they don't even have an envelope to send themselves to another being. All they do is, okay, you have AAC, let's say, in your DNA. They will take that part and they will copy it 1,000 times or 10,000 times. Now suddenly in your genome, you're going to have a whole what we call repeatable sequence element. You're going to have 10,000 times AAC, AAC, AAC. And that part of your genome does nothing. It does nothing in terms of protein expression. But as long as there is zero cost, when you think about selfish genetic theory, it's anything that can reproduce will stay. And so these little selfish genetic elements, they have close to zero cost in energy. And as long as they stay below the limit genome size, under which the costs are very low for the overall organism, your organism is going to survive to the next generation, no matter how much copies they do, which is why we end up with millions of repeatable sequences in our genome. So that is one example, one scale at which this limit gets reached by nature. That is, the repeatable sequence element that do absolutely nothing for your survival still survive in the genome under a form of selfishness that can only live within the space where they don't disrupt your organism. But we know that we don't end up having infinite amounts of repeatable sequences. So the reason we do is that there must be a limit. There must be a point at which these repeatable sequences are too costly to maintain. Because, let's be clear here, adding 1 million items of AAC on one segment of DNA means that your whole body, with your trillions of cells, all need 1 million more molecules of AAC, which is 1 million times 3 times 1 trillion cells, or whatever amount of trillions of cells you have in your body. So imagine this. I mean, just a series of DNA added like this may seem like very low cost, especially at the speed at which it operates. But do that 1 trillion times, and that's the total cost for your organism. How many more mice will you have to catch if you're a cat to sustain this demand for DNA molecules and the energy associated with it? It's enormous when you think about it. But it's enormous, and yet it's achievable for the selfish genetic element because it doesn't bother the organism. As it turns out, surviving with carrying 1 million more base of DNAs is kind of equal to surviving without carrying it. And because it's kind of equal or small enough, miniature enough to ignore for life, it happens. These selfish genetic elements survive. Now, it also happens at other scales, I'm sure. When you consider that the human genome has about 10,000 functional genes, why don't we have 100,000? Well, it's probably because these genes, in the overall deployment of their structures, they have a cost. And I'm sure that there is a form of filtering that happens where those genes that are bringing the less gains and that are still costing energy must be subject to negative selection. It's quite simple. Ultimately, it's the mathematics of life is in the overall causes of everything that you cause, including your energy cost. Are you negative or are you positive? If you're positive, the genes increase their representation in the population. If you're negative, they decrease. It's as simple as this, and it applies to the energy cost of everything that the gene leads to. So it happens with the genes that do if-then. It happens with the genes that don't do if-then. It happens at the frequency with which the if test is tested and how much energy it costs to test it and in how much cells will it operate. All of this must be taken into account to consider the fitness overall of a gene. Based Evolver says, I am positive that this woman has a chair in her shower. Well, that is a great degree of assurance. Have you, did you see her shower? Did you have access to her shower? Article 45 will roll back web security by 12 years. The EU is poised to pass a sweeping new regulation, EIDAS 2.0. Buried deep in the text is Article 45, which returns us to the dark ages of 2011, when certificate authorities could collaborate with governments to spy on encrypted traffic and get away with it. Article 45 forbids browsers from enforcing modern security requirements on certain CAs, so the SSH, HTTPS certificates, without the approval of an EU member government. Which CAs, specifically the CAs that were appointed by the government, which in some case will be owned or operated by that self-same government. That means cryptographic keys under one government's control could be used to intercept HTTPS communication throughout the EU and beyond. Well, what a bunch of fucking bullshit. I've always forged my own HTTPS keys. I've always benefited from the higher security that it offers. It's kind of a painful process, but once you understand why we do this, it makes absolute sense. I totally object to those seed keys being known and controllable by the government. It, you know, it's a little bit like Bitcoin. When you do HTTPS communication, you do it with a Linux server that has generated a series of words. You could see them as words. They are actually just a key with letters and numbers. And this ensures that you're talking to the right server, and this ensures that any element along the way cannot intercept this message and understand what it means. Thanks to the greatness of a combination of the computer, the Linux server manager having generated independently his own keys, just like Bitcoin, but on top of it, having added a layer of commutative encryption in which there is a shared secret established, and you can be sure that the server is the original server and that the client is the original client. You cannot be in between and inject false data. Can you imagine if you were to connect to your bank and you say, all right, withdraw $100,000 from this account to this account? If there's a middleman in the middle who can access to the meaning of your message, and he can easily inject, well, do the exact same operation, but just change the bits that relate to the wallet, to the bank account, to destination. So suddenly you're not withdrawing 100,000 to your own account. You are sending 100,000 to someone else's account in some other country. Now, this is the importance of commutative encryption in web security. And there is so much that relies on HTTPS at this point being functional. I know for most people, it's just a little lock at the top of their browser. And it's like, is that really safe? I've passed through various stages in my life where I was like, this is just annoying. Like, why would I? But now I understand. I understand your signal on the web is passing through so many hoops. Any of these hoops being corrupted would allow a manual insertion of fake code. It would allow to change the meaning of your transactions. Why is it so important that every message of the Bitcoin blockchain is signed? It's because if it wasn't signed, any of the people who pass that message from your wallet to the blockchain, each of these people could redirect the money to themselves. But because the message is signed, they don't have the signature key and they can't do it. That is why it's so important. And HTTPS is what allows these protections from middlemen attack. And it seems, based on this description, that the Europe is headed toward allowing themselves a special status as a middleman. And this can't be good. Even if they were doing so with extremely good intent of fighting terrorism or whatever, what can guarantee that your low-level employee is not going to redirect my computations and my different transactions on the internet? So fuck Article 45 and fuck Europe as a whole. I got a little tired. Oh, the Israelis are so desperate in this war. It's fantastic. They are using, as someone was describing on Twitter, they are using thirst traps. They constantly have these pictures of cute females being in the army. It's like, bro, how many males will be misdirected towards supporting the Israeli army just because they have the impression that this is where the cute girls are? Bro, you're going to go to the Israeli army. You're going to find yourself in an ugly platoon, and you're going to end up being blown up by a Hamas rocket. You're not going to date Natalia. Tactical lip fillers, says DK Shadow. Can you imagine the effort that they go through to do all this makeup? Like, this is not it's not part of your preparation for combat. So you're really doing this on the side as a form of mediatic attack of military recruitment objective. It's so pathetic because you are using a sex signal fundamentally to misdirect males toward fucking their lives up. Stephen Robinson says, every girl 19 to 21 is in the Israel army. Yeah, but you know what? I've seen randomly picked pictures of Israel. This is not the average Israeli woman, okay? Silver Spider sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, Entropy is also an option. The link is in the description below. Silver Spider sends a super chat. He says, hey, Jeff, I've been hearing this explanation all over the place for the conflict between Israel and Palestine. The globalists hate Christianity, so they are teaming up with the Muslims to destroy the Christians and the Jews to destroy America. Is this the current Christian nationalist position? Absolutely not. This theory that you lay out, it's the first time I hear it laid out so explicitly and so ridiculously. The idea that the globalists hate Christianity, so they're teaming up with the Muslims to destroy the Christians and the Jews. No, no. What's fundamentally motivating the Muslim side in this conflict is a war for existence, a war for conquest and territorial integrity. From the perspective of the Muslims of many countries, including the Palestinians, the Israelis are an occupation force. So that they have come and they have occupied a region that they considered belonged to them. And when you look at Israel, when you look at this area of the world, Middle East, and you look at Israel, it is the only place where a bunch of Jews are there existing instead of a majority Muslim population. And so from the perspective of the Muslims, it's not a fight against Christianity. It's a fight for survival and a fight for territorial coverage. You can see it as conquest or you can see it as reconquest, but that's what motivates them fundamentally. Now, the story you say, where this whole attack of the Muslims would be targeted at the Israelis because they hate Christianity, that seems like a made-up story to justify a perception on the Christian side that they should ally with Israel, that they should be sympathetic toward Israel. In other words, it seems that your narrative is a design story for the neocon progression in America, which is the default view in America, the most popular, the one that most Christians converge toward, this whole we have to partner with Israel because whatever. It seems to me that that the meme you mention is a meme designed to have you side with Israel, to think that somehow it's a war between the civilized world, between the Christian and the Jews, against the uncivilized world, the Muslim population. You have to be careful. You have to be careful not to fall for these simple narratives. I'm not particularly impressed by Israeli civilization, and I don't feel that it's an extension of the Western world. I think it's an extension of the Western world to the extent that they drain our resources, they drain our money. But it's only that. It's not more than this. It's not the shining light of Western values into the Middle East. It is a country of conquest and occupation. Now, okay, conquest and occupation are a thing. Sometimes you have to do it to survive. But I think it's particularly unintelligent to have set up right there in the Middle East, at the middle of the world, where there's overpopulation. Like, if you wanted to be serious about creating a true home for the Jews, why wouldn't you go for Madagascar? Why wouldn't you go for any of these other choices where there would be less population and where your presence would not be setting up an existential conflict with another existing population? John Drake says there was a large Jewish demonstration in Toronto, a massive line of cars being protected by police with Israeli flags and signs saying eradicate Hamas on them. They were honking horns and flashing peace signs. I didn't see a single person give them a thumbs up, only curses. The browning of Toronto isn't going well for our Jewish population. Oh yeah, they will certainly have to pay the price of the fact that the thing is, the Jewish population is very small, and I think a lot of the resentment against Christianity that they hold is this ability that Christians had to fully populate America. From its inception to recently. And it's like, yeah, you're always going to have to live around people who know how to reproduce, because you clearly don't. You clearly don't know how to expand your population. You clearly have elements within your population that are so revolted against traditionalism that when they leave your population, they integrate their host society and only to attack the reproduction and the demographic stability of the host society. That is the story of, if you will, the progression from these Jewish traditional and extremely, you know, Hasidic Jew families down to the CNN Jews, who will be just merely anti-natalist, but whose speech will mostly affect the host civilization. So you're bound to always, you cannot have this revolt against nature and be reproductive. You're going to have to side with heterosexuality. You're going to have to side with it strong. And you're going to have to side with traditionalism, continuity, and high birth rates. Now, you can say, well, Jeff, the birth rate is relatively high in Israel. It kind of is, but not to the extent that allowed whites to populate the entirety of North America. See? To the extent that, yes, Israel has a standing in the Middle East right now as a Jewish nation, yes. Can they outcompete the Muslims? Can they outcompete the breeding of the Muslims who are now citizens of Israel? I don't even know if they can do that. By the way, talking about based stuff, Charlie Kirk is going all in. It's like, why should there be any difference between him and Nick Fuentes at this point?
Here's what Democrats are going, what Jewish Democrats or Jews in general are going to have to make a decision.
Yes, all Jews. What? What is Charlie about to say?
Until you crush the cultural Marxist lens of which they view the world, you will never actually be able to build support for Israel. You cannot subsidize support and play footsie with cultural Marxism and have a future for the state of Israel. So you have to choose.
My God. How is that not what the likes of Nick Fuentes, me, and others have been saying for 5 or 6 years? Playing footsie with Marxism. That's what the Jews are doing. They are kind of trying to technocratically play the game of Marxism. Play the game of Marxism with us, with our families, with Christian civilization as a whole. But why is it that we had to wait years for Charlie Kirk to say these things? And it seems that he's merely trying to copy them in a pale fashion at this point.
And Jews have been some of the largest funders of cultural Marxist ideas and supporters of those ideas over the last 30 or 40 years. Stop supporting causes that hate you. Now you might say, well, you know, how is one thing applied to the other? If you train a generation, if you everything through an oppressor-oppressed lens, they will apply that lens to the Israel-Hamas conflict. The same way that they apply it to the police issue, the gender issue, good guy, bad guy, somebody on top, somebody on bottom. Until you...
Now at this point, he's standing, it's a little different because he's kind of standing as a counselor for Jewish people. He's saying, for Israeli interests, stop cultivating an oppressed lens. And he's touching on a very important point here. The oppressor-oppressed lens is fundamentally an anti-capitalist, Marxist talking point, but it's one with which the Islamic population is very sympathetic. You know, the Islamic population in Western civilization, they are leftist. They are leftist not in the social conservatism sense, but they are totally on board with the anti-capitalism program of the left. Now, the anti-capitalism program of the left rests on the oppressor-oppressed fundamental pillar, if you will. And it will also lead to a lot of these Muslim people to both vote for the left, but also disagree with the attack on the family by the left, because the Muslims remain conservative. So you find yourself with a problem if you're an Israeli or a pro-Israeli person. It's that society is drifting away from your control. Society is headed in an anti-capitalist direction, and an anti-capitalist direction that is fueled by social conservative Muslims who are not into the program of the left, of the attack on the family, of the LGBT activism and all this. It's an interesting position where we should think as white people, how do we get our chips from this bet? Because you're going to pay the price of demographic change. You're going to pay an enormous price for it, but at this point it will happen. So let's leave this on the side. We have lost the demographic battle. Lost the demographic battle from a standpoint of keeping a white majority and a white, mainly white nation. But now that the Middle Eastern contribution contingent is coming into Western civilization, it might not all be bad. There might be ways in which it creates frictions within the left, perhaps shutting down their drive against the family, which will provide protection to Muslim families, but we can probably benefit from protection also for white families, hopefully. And it will also create a base of support that will eventually make the support of Israel impossible. And Charlie Kirk is hitting right there, but he's doing it from a perspective of counseling the Jews. I would simply say what he just said, but from a perspective of how do we counsel white people on this? Should we let it happen? Should we use the Muslim immigrants to change a defect of our nation, which is this allegiance to Israel? The bird flu says, Jeff, they will attack you in the streets. Well, not if I flee the places where they live. I get what you mean. Like, I'm not saying let us celebrate the demographic change of Western civilization. I'm saying since it will happen, we have to start thinking about how will we protect from the negative impacts of it, and how do we benefit from the positives. You have to benefit from a situation when you're forced into it. Philosoraptor says, how does it feel to be aligned with Antifa when it comes to Israel? Well, yeah, I mean, it has crossed my mind. How does it feel? I've been asking myself this question. Honestly, it feels like nothing. I was like, am I shocked? Am I morally offended? Am I disgusted at myself? And it's like, no. I will not deplore if things turn in a way that my ideas are joined by so many people that those are people I disagree with on other points. I think we should celebrate the general sentiment that is developing against the actions of Israel and celebrate all of it, even if the people we ally with for this particular point turn out to be people with whom we will disagree and make war on other subjects, I think we should always celebrate when our side wins, even if it wins by convincing people who are otherwise completely foreign to our political ideology.
Cleanse that ideology from the hierarchy and the academic elite of the West, there will not be a safe future. I'm not going to say Israel won't exist, but Israel will be in jeopardy as long as the Western children of the West, are being taught with primarily Jewish dollars subsidizing it to view everything through oppressor-oppressed dynamic. Until you shed that ideology, you will not be able to build the case for Israel because they view Israel as an oppressor.
Wow. There is a lot here. I mean, Charlie Kirk is going far. Jewish dollars are, and he's right. He's right on all these points. Jewish dollars funding academia, raising the next generation of children into these giga leftists, giga Marxists. And it's going to come to bite you back. Those are points of the far right. Those are points we would discuss for years. And we would complain against this. And we would laugh our ass off also about it. We would say, you know, this is coming. It's coming for them. And here we have Charlie Kirk laying it out in full to his audience. Well, we have to give credit to where credit is due. Charlie Kirk has attained an understanding of important issues here. Toyota's $10,000 future pickup truck is basic transportation perfection. Well, okay, but make it happen. Like, every time I see these trucks, they're like $50,000, $60,000. If there's a Toyota $10,000 pickup truck, I'm buying it. I don't care. I don't need a pickup truck, but I'll buy it still. But make it happen. I don't see anything at 10,000 new. Zen Jitsu says, finally catching you live. Always watch you the day after on RSS feed. Well, here you are. Welcome. Frog Eyes says, Jeff, are you a MGS1 fan? Metal Gear Solid fan? Seeing it has a major selfish gene theory plot, did you ever play this PS1 classic? Famous line from Liquid, you cannot fight your genes, it's fate. All living things are born for the sole purpose of passing on their parents' genes. That's why I follow what my genes tell me. That sounds very cringe. I have not played that game. I have seen clips of it. I have not played that game. Isn't it the game from which there's literally an RNA phenotypic revolution reference in the little clip that I've seen? I think it's that game. It's interesting because they talk about the RNA world and they say they're going to make it, they're going to do it again. And it's really like the revolutionary phenotype. Stephen Robinson says, Jeff, did you come to an answer for GSP's biological question? I didn't. I can play it here.
One question that keeps you up at night.
At the end of the last ice age, 12,000 years ago in North America,
man, George St. Pierre looks so much like my brothers. I mean, he's of course more built because he's an athlete, but the accent, the Quebecois accent, the general structure of the jaws, this is like my brother.
Why the dire wolf, American lion, short-faced bear, even humans, the clovis culture, disappeared? But why the gray wolf, the cougar, and the grizzly bear survived?
Okay, so I have no clue the answer to this question. Why did the Ice Age come in North America, killed a bunch of species, and other species survived? I mean, it's super... it's trivial to come up with various hypotheses. Like, there must be species that are more reliant on continued vegetation, perhaps, and these species weren't able. They didn't have a niche in the Ice Age, and they all disappeared. And whatever species have survived may have been, they have found a niche to survive through an Ice Age. Now, what could be that niche? Maybe fishing, maybe being less reliant on an ecosystem of vegetation. Whatever, you know, whatever it is, they had some key to survival. And it's probably a different explanation for different species. But all of these species somehow had a niche that they could exploit, that could still work under an ice age. But I don't know the detail. I don't know if we have deep research on this and if there are serious hypotheses available. I don't know this field enough. An official statement from MNPD Nashville Police Chief John Drake confirming the authenticity of the Nashville Manifesto. I am greatly disturbed by today's unauthorized release of 3 pages of writings from the Covenant shooter. So that's the sentence, basically. He doesn't deny that it's writing from the Covenant shooter, and he says those are 3 pages of writings from the Covenant shooter. So after the terrible communication strategy we have seen yesterday, which was kind of making press statements that were kind of suggesting that maybe it's not true or this is not a crime element of the crime scene. Okay, we know that the book wasn't found on the crime scene. But is it the manifesto of the shooter? That's what matters. And importantly, you know, the manifesto in writing suggests that there should be a video recording, that there could be a video recording of the shooter who has made a statement on video. I mean, at least it was in his schedule or her schedule. I don't know, is it a man or a woman? I don't remember. But there was something on the schedule that was saying, film the little video. So there is a message out there that could that could give us insight into the political ideology of the person. But, I mean, I think we understand enough from the writings. This police department is extremely serious about the investigation to identify the person responsible. This action showed a total disregard for Covenant families, as well as the court system, which has control of the shooter's journals at the present time due to litigation filed earlier this year. It is now pending in Davidson County Chancery Court and the Tennessee Court of Appeals. We are not at liberty to release the journals until the courts rule. Our police department looks forward to the ultimate resolution of the litigation concerning the journals. So clearly here there was a legal case, and there is people attempting to keep it hidden and people attempting to get it revealed. Steven Crowder explained on his show, he kind of gave cues as to who leaked. I think he was a little careless in revealing so much. He says that we verified that the person that was bringing these photos to us was an investigator, a police agent on the case, basically a lead investigator. I think by saying this, he may have closed the window down to one or two policemen. And it does seem that the pictures we can see the pictures, they include a glove that is purple, that is very typical of the protection glove that police can wear when they handle evidence, you know, these scientific medical gloves. So that is what we know, but at least there is confirmation that what we have seen appears to be true writings from the shooter. NFT owners were blinded by UV light. You know how these NFT people, they always go for the new thing. They always ape into something new, and they create these money flows toward ridiculous stuff. They also do this with technology, apparently. They found it to be very cool to have a conference where everything was glowy like this, even in the toilet. So you had glowy sides of the wall, glowy signs. Everything is purple and ultraviolet. And here the guy says, oh my fucking God, they used UVC germicidal lamps as black lights. They're just fucking out there. You should never see this. And so they made a conference in Hong Kong. This is for the Ape Fest, Bored Ape Yacht Club Ape Fest hashtag. It was a conference of people with NFTs of bored apes. If you want to see what, you know, these bored apes. Now, amazingly, there's an, there, I found an NFT of these bored apes that is getting UV light just beamed into his eyes. Maybe this NFT will come to be extremely valuable because now the attendants at the conference have been blinded and we don't know if the damage will be permanent. But we know that many of them reported waking up and not seeing. People believe that there might be repair possible, that they may recover it. They may recover being blinded by all this UV light. Here's another toilet. You can see everything was glowy here, glowy. Too much glowy. And apparently this is what they were using. So that would be the germicidal lamp that is normally meant to be in a metal protector. And it really shoots mostly down. You can see these things at the entry of Walmart and other places. They use it, and I don't know to which extent it works. Like, for, I went to the Walmart today, and it's like they have a little lamp like this. It's covered a little bit by metal, and it's at the entry. And this is the little lamp for the whole Walmart. To what extent is this lamp keeping mosquitoes from entering? Are mosquitoes just flying close to the lamp and then just falling? How does that work? I have no clue. But I've seen these lamps again and again. But apparently here they use them as black light and they haven't thought of protecting them with a metal cover. Base Devolver says UV doesn't make sense. Very dangerous. You can achieve the same glowing effect with radium paint. Well, yeah, I mean, UV is very dangerous. When we were working with UV light in labs, we had to wear gloves. Now, it's super easy to protect from UV light. A little glove, super thin glove will protect you. Even glass will protect you. So it doesn't, or is it glass or plastic? I think plastic might protect you. So even transparent plastic will catch the UV rays. But if you don't protect yourself, it can induce cancer. And in this case, we don't know if the owners of the NFTs will end up with cancer, but it was strong enough that they have burnt part of their retina. So that's really too bad. Hamas leaders worth a staggering $11 billion revel in luxury while Gaza's people suffer. And they show us pictures of a bunch of high society Hamas leaders who are apparently rich. And I'm like, this is quite cheap. First, Gaza people are suffering because Israel is bombarding them. If you want Gaza to not be poor, stop bombarding them in the first place. So that's the first disgusting aspect to this headline. The poverty of Gaza currently is not an economic problem of injustice and of wealth distribution. Are you fucking kidding me? The poverty in Gaza right now is caused by bombs. They can't get rich because they get bombed. And secondly, I'm not morally offended by Hamas leaders having $11 billion. I will start, before I'm offended by this, I will be offended by the wealth inequalities in America. Because take the lowest of the lows of America and compare them to the highest of the high, and you're going to see perhaps more wealth inequality than the distinction between a Gazan right now and a billionaire Gazan. I think this article totally misses the mark. Breaking, jihadist militias have murdered more than 800 black Africans from the Masalt tribe in Darfur, Sudan, over the past few days. In this video, the Hamas-allied jihadis filmed themselves capturing black Africans. Any protest march planned in London? So yes, this is probably an illustration of what is happening across the Middle East, wherever Muslims don't control the territory. They have an attempt at conquest and expansion of territory, controlling more territory. Philosoraptor says, nope, the poverty is caused by their own ideology. Look, do I want to take the time through the whole fallacious presupposition here? First, by starting your sentence with nope, you are suggesting that simply raising another cause makes this cause disappear. So perhaps Gaza is partly made poor by their ideology. But that doesn't change that they are certainly made poor by being bombed. It's like, okay, on the path to Gaza becoming a rich nation, certainly their ideology would matter. But that doesn't change the fact that certainly stopping to be bombed would be necessary. So be careful when you start a sentence with nope like this, because you may be implying a false dichotomy, and that's what you're doing here. It's like saying, let's take something that has two causes to it. Okay, here's something that truly has two causes to it. This baby is born. Why is this baby born? Well, it's because of the mother. So let's say I had the theory, this baby is born because of the mother. And you come at me and you say, nope, it's because of the father. Well, my statement that it's because of the mother is still valid. Now, you are bringing another hypothetical contributor. Okay, let's study whether this particular father has injected sperm into this mother. And then, yes, I will grant that the father has caused the birth of the baby. But be careful with multiple causes. Be careful with multiple causes and with rejection of someone else's hypothesis by starting with nope. Colin Maxworth says, Philosoraptor, being a Jew has nothing to do with his opinion. Yes, I believe that Philosoraptor, every time I talk about Israeli stuff, he is triggered. He is triggered. But we'll try to go easy on you, Philosoraptor. Tucker Carlson interviews the most hated man in America. I'm not going to bow down to the government. Martin Shkreli, talking about the judicial process against him, says it doesn't make a difference whether you're guilty or not. It's a foregone conclusion. Yeah, more and more I have the impression that the justice system has been turned into a machine to really go after selected people and just find them guilty. Even SBF, I'm shocked. Like, I personally think that SBF deserve jail and a lot of jail. But the speed at which he was found guilty, it's like, hey, I've not seen this in many other cases. Was there a political route for this trial? It was relatively expedited. Yes, I agree with Martin Shkreli. And although Martin Shkreli is the most hated man in the world, I personally love Martin Shkreli. I personally feel only love and warmth toward this guy. Philosoraptor says, do you honestly think that Israel would bomb Gaza unprovoked? I don't see the problem. They have been unprovoked by the people they are bombing. So yes, they are currently bombing Gaza, and the people they are bombing have not provoked them. There is maybe a group of a handful of hundreds of terrorists that have provoked them, but those are not the people that are currently being bombed. So when you ask me, how do you think that Israel would bomb Gaza unprovoked? They are currently doing it. They're currently bombing people who have done no provocation to them. Just take any of the babies that are coming out, baby pictures of dead babies every day, and explain to me, how did this dead baby provoke Israel? DK Shadow says those evil Hamas babies provoked them. The thing is, provoked. This whole conception of provoked. You know that you are into the space of political justification when someone has to use this term. Because provoked is not a fact of nature. Provoked is a subjective term. Like suppose that something bad happens in my life. I don't know. My car just broke. My car just broke and I'm pissed and now I beat my wife because I'm so pissed at the car being broke that out of no reason and unrelated to my wife, but suddenly I start beating my wife. Is this provoked attack or an unprovoked attack? It seems that my wife didn't break my car, and therefore my attack toward my wife is an unprovoked attack. So the current attack against everyone in Gaza, destroying their entire society, carpet bombing their cities, and killing everyone that's reachable by a bomb in this area, seems like the man beating his wife because his car doesn't work. Or the man beating his wife because he got attacked by someone else who is unrelated to his wife. None of this makes sense. The provocation is a construct in your head, and you're redirecting the violence towards someone who's totally unrelated to the provocation. Rodita Sid says, also, Israel lost 1,400 people and 9,000 people in Palestine. It won't be a fair exchange until they reach a 30-to-1 ratio, right? Exactly. So now that there are 9,000 dead Palestinians, is it now... If Hamas was to attack Israel, would that be an unprovoked attack? Would you be here, Fidozoraptor, saying, Jeff, today I'm fine with Hamas attack because it was not unprovoked? Israel, by killing 9,000 Palestinians, have led to a provocation of Hamas. And suddenly it's, you wouldn't apply this. Because you're only using the unprovoked words when it fits your narrative, when it fits the side that you like. he says, I'm only after the truth. I'm not on the side of Jews. Well, if you are interested in the truth, ask yourself, what is the epistemology of provocation? If you were to ask yourself, was there a provocation to Hamas action? And going back the last 100 years, is there something that I could build as a reasonable hypothesis to explain that the October 7th Hamas action were provoked? Take any of the civil rights violations of the Palestinian, any of the attacks, any of the colonialism that has been happening, any of the settlers stuff, any of the denial of human rights, any of the sniping of children that has happened within the last 100 years. What if someone was to come at you and say, Hey, the Hamas October 7th attack was provoked. It was provoked by any of the items I just listed. Now what? Is it now morally okay? Because it's provoked? Because if you do the twist, if you do the storm, the swirl, if you go down the swirl of who provoked who and when, you're going to find that there is an infinite swirl of provocation that comes at the root of any human conflict. The escalation of violence builds over generations. And ultimately, the Israelis, when they started their little terrorist campaign in 1948 to make some place for themselves, they provoked a lot of stuff when they settled there. You're not going to find the truth by using the word provoke, because the word provoke is a social moral lens applied to facts. Phytosoraptor says, if Ontario voted in Hamas, and Hamas terrorized Quebec consistently, and Ontario really hated the Quebecois, they're taught in school to hate you, what would you do? Well, I would acknowledge the existential conflict that happens between them and me. I would assess what are my options to secure the environment in which I live. And if these options do not exist, then I would flee. I would either secure in place or flee. Secure in place or flee. This is the story of my line of ancestry, and it goes on as long as there is space to flee to. That is what I would do, but I'm not saying that's even the only option. I'm just saying, if you want to place yourself as a defender of Israel, at least be honest about it. Come to me, and instead of saying provocation, provocation, JF, provocation, be honest and say, I want to destroy these people because they exist on a spot that I want to exist on. And I feel threatened by their violence, and I'm going to eliminate them. At least you'd be honest. But now you're like, oh, well, a provoked attack. And You're not even granting the other side their own provocation. So you are just sugarcoating your genocidal project. You're talking to an artist. I'm willing to hear you on your genocidal project. I'm willing to respect you and get it out from you. I want you to express your emotion, but I want you to be honest about it. Phytosoraptor says, what would you do as a province, good seer? Sir, there's no fleeing as an option. Well, that is not true. I mean, that is not true. There is the very establishment of the Jews in Israel was a fleeing. So it can happen. It can happen that a people moves. And I believe personally that the Jews have chosen a ridiculous spot. They have chosen a terrible spot to establish. That's my view. I think that Madagascar would have been so much better. Phytosoraptor says, be honest and admit you want to destroy Israel. You don't think it should be there. Well, again, I just mentioned it. I just said what is my view. It's not so much that I want to destroy Israel. It's that I think that from the start, they've chosen a ridiculous spot, where they will inevitably be in an existential conflict against a conquering force of Muslims. Now, you pay the price of your decisions. In Papa JF's world, if you want to be a crack whore on the street, you can go be a crack whore on the streets. And if you get raped and your body is dropped in a ditch, I'm not responsible for it. And Israel has decided to be a crack whore in the Middle East. And so I'm not, it's not that I'm actively wanting the destruction of Israel. It's just, you guys have squeezed themselves into the heart of existential human civilizational conflict. What did you think would happen? Spindly Opinion says, if they want to live in that spot, okay, but no money from white countries and no white men going to die in their wars. Exactly. If they can maintain that existence, I for one believe that without American money, their existence would already be totally abolished. They wouldn't be there. I think that we are maintaining an artificial situation with a lot of money and a lot of military aggression. So, as a libertarian, I see unsustainable systems and I want them to stop being sustained artificially. I like when unsustainable systems die. And I believe that Israel as it stands is unsustainable. I don't wish harm on them. But when you do bad decisions, you have to pay for the price. DK Shadow says, Jews were used by the British for divide and conquer. It may look like this, and it may have been true at some point. But the Jews' effects on Western civilization have been so major since that one wants to revert the phrasing here and say, well, at this point, given that the entire American military has been bound to Israeli interests for decades, I like to phrase it in the alternative route, which is, at this point, it is white population that is being exploited and used. But you're right. It may have been part of the initial thinking around the establishment of Israel by the English politics that did it to seed chaos, and perhaps the Jews then were used as a kind of proxy. Absolutely. Philosoraptor says, Israel is there because it can. For the same reason, Quebec is on Indian land. I don't support giving them a cent. I agree a lot with you on this topic, and I agree about your provocation assessment, and I'm not a Jew. All right, well, thanks for clarifying all of this. Yeah, if we can agree that the provocation lens is the one that is most manipulable on this conflict, already we have made a lot of progress in this conversation. Now, you say Israel exists because they can? Yes, I mean, basically that statement can be said about anything that exists. Tables exist because they can. Because they're not destroyed immediately by entropy, you know? but the difference is how much energy are you investing in maintaining something? So a bridge exists because it can, until it can't. And then the bridge falls. How much energy do you have to do the maintenance of the bridge? How much of the rebuilding of the pillar do you need to do every 20 years or every 60 years? That is what matters, ultimately. Everything that exists exists because it can, of course. But everything needs an input if you don't want it to break. And the problem of Israel is that this input is extremely costly. Extremely costly in money and extremely costly in evil, evil deeds. We had to invest a lot of human lives dying just to secure Israel. And we had to invest a lot of hate being directed at America just to serve Israeli security interests. When you consider the whole of the cost, I say, yes, Israel exists because it can't, but it couldn't without us having paid that price. And I'm not willing to pay that price anymore. I've never been. John says, no excuse for their imprudence gets by JF. Yes, I am a man who detects these words, who detects the biases that exist within the semantic space. A male suspect has been taken into custody with an AR-15 outside of the U.S. Capitol. U.S. Capitol responded to an emergency call concerning a man with an AR-15 outside the U.S. Capitol. Okay, there's the guy. Well, threat averted, I guess. Israeli troops are fighting in the heart of Gaza City. Hamas leader surrounded in a bunker. I don't know to which extent that is true. Like, are they... Sometimes you can have an impression that there are good advances, but it's part of a trap and it's part of the fighting strategy. So I don't know if we are, as the title suggests, you know, at the border of a capture of important Hamas leaders who are surrounded in a bunker. Maybe, maybe not. Philosoraptor says, Israel lobbying the U.S. like mad. They corrupted their political system and drugged it with an Israel love spell. I don't support sending a cent to Israel. However, it's not the reality we live in. Israel exists because they played their cards right, even if you consider it vile, as I do. Well, they played their card right. Yeah, they drained the money that they were able to drain from America and the efforts and the lives of people in America. Now, if you want to look at it from a moral, from a nihilistic lens, like, I don't believe in anything and all I care about is survival, sure, then they played the right game. But sometimes the right game is for someone to refuse to extend the help. And this should be the right game for Americans. That's what I care about. Now, the fact that there are people begging for our support and money, that is not surprising. What we should be able to do is say no. And in many ways, we have been kept from saying no by the American technocracy, which has a strong Jewish component, which has control of institutions, which are keeping the real will of Americans for independence to be expressed. So I don't think that Americans are that warm to the ideas of supporting a global empire. I don't think that they are properly informed also, because so much of the information we got before the era of individual contributors, so much of the information we got was tainted and was played with by people who wanted to direct us into a certain direction. You have to consider all of this to when you say they played the right game. Well, the right game from a very dishonest, very control-oriented standpoint. Lyndon says, Israel is the most highly developed nation in the Middle East, JF. They don't need American aid. American military technology helps, however. Oh, well, great, great. I'm happy that we have reached a resolution. We will stop Israel aid. They don't need it. They don't need it, so let's be done with it. They don't need it, but we're sending it. Okay, but why are we sending aid that they don't need? I mean, if they don't need it, we shouldn't be sending it. I would want what you said to be true and accepted by the American government, but it doesn't seem to be the case. Biden's Democratic coalition is splintering over Israel and the economy. Joe Biden has a huge problem, many problems actually, and two of them are Democrat representatives, Rashida Tlaib. The majority of the American people are not with you on this one. Hashtag ceasefire now. And she was publishing perhaps shocking videos of Palestinian suffering. Joe Biden supported the genocide of the Palestinian people. The American people won't forget. Biden, support a ceasefire now or don't count on us in 2024. So we have a little rebellion within the Democrat Party. I think that Jewish interests have a strong enough take over most politicians. So I don't think it's going to spread massively, but it's still significant because there is a big friction between the base of support of the economically leftist Muslim people and the left. And if the left keeps siding always with Israel, so much so that they are undistinguishable on this question from the right, from the center right, and these people, these neocons, Republicans, then at some point there's going to be a contingent of politicians who will dissociate from the Democrat Party, and perhaps this voting base will find themselves just voting for chaos. Just, all right, if you give me a Trump on the Republican side, I'm going to vote Trump. And if you give me someone who's less pro-Israeli on the Democrat side, I'm going to vote for them. So that's there will not be a political home, a clear political home for the pro-Gaza Muslim population. But they will have to play their cards like this, oscillating between the various offers from various political parties. DK Shadow says, the left will try to bribe the Muslims with more social programs and welfare. That is a possibility, that they might try to kind of overexpose the campaign strategy to stuff like this and try to kind of swept the Israeli issue under the rug, but it's going to be hard to do. Frog Eyes says, JF, have you ever been a smoker? I smoked some cigars for maybe, if I take the various moments of which I've smoked cigars and sometimes cigarettes, I may have smoked for a total of 2 years in my life. But it was like a bunch of months here, a bunch of months there. If I collide all of it, I may have smoked over about 2 years. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you all tomorrow. Do we have stuff on the schedule? We should definitely start planning the Patreon hangout and what day it will be. So if you are part of our monthly meetup, don't hesitate to send me DMs on Patreon and subscribe star. And you can also write to me on locals or in Twitter DMs or Discord DM. And let me know next week, do you have preferences for the private monthly hangout between the 12 and the 18? And I'll pick a date from next week. Bye bye, everyone. Much love. Thank you.